From 1880 to 1905, he held the post as what was called chief procurator of the Holy Synod. This meant he was the layman, he was not a priest, who was in charge of administering the Russian Orthodox Church. And this meant he had power over education, because the church controlled many of the schools in the country and set rules for others. It also meant he had control, in a certain sense, over ideas, at least the church's effort to spread ideas over culture as well. But he also had very direct influence over the thinking of Russia's last two rulers. He was chosen to be the tutor of Alexander III, and then Alexander III again chose him to be the tutor for his own son, Nicholas II, both before they inherited the thrones. And he remained a close personal advisor to both rulers until his death. He was enormously influential. For example, in 1881, Pobedonosov almost single-handedly convinced Alexander III to reject the reforms of Larys Melikov. Initially, Alexander III was unsure. After all, his father had signed it, after all. Pobedonosov convinced him how dangerous this would be. And in 1895, when the new Tsar, Nicholas II, came to the throne, he would similarly convince the Tsar to make his first public statement, one declaring his rejection of any form of representative government, even consultative. Now, Pobedonosov's thinking about politics is fairly straightforward. In fact, one might say rather blunt and harsh. He opposed any constitutional or legal limitation on the power of the monarch whatsoever. He saw these as counter to Russian traditions, and counter, most importantly, to the nature, the true nature of the Russian people. We've seen this in the ideas of official nationality before. And the tone with which he condemned constitutionalism is revealing as the fact itself. For example, quite early in 1879, he wrote to his student, Alexander III, before he came to the throne, the following about people who spoke about the usefulness of liberal reform in Russia. He writes, Pobedonosov, he says, "What I hear from highly placed people of different stations and ranks makes me sick. It's as if I were in the company of half-wits or perverted apes. Everywhere I hear that trite, deceitful, accursed word, constitution." And he concluded remarkably. He declared, "A Russian revolution, an ugly upheaval, is preferable to a constitution, because the former, a revolution, could be suppressed, order restored throughout the land, but the latter is poison to the entire organism." And Pobedonosov's conservatism was not only shrill in tone, it was very extreme in content. For example, in 1881, when Alexander III first came to power, he shocked many ministers when he made a speech before the whole gathered cabinet in the Winter Palace, in which he condemned almost all the reforms of Alexander II. He blamed courts and lawyers for crime and murder, said there wouldn't be so much if it weren't for the courts and the lawyers. He denounced all forms of representative local governments, zemstvos, city government. He even denounced what little bit of freedom of the press was left, of course, at the end of the reign of Alexander II. Most ministers were aghast. Even the relatively liberal war minister, a man named Dmitry Milyutin, declared that Pobedonosov's talk before them on that moment was, in his words, a negation of all that is the foundation of European civilization. And it's worth saying he was not entirely off base. Philosophically, Pobedonosov did reject the very central ideas of the European Enlightenment, namely faith in human reason. For Pobedonosov, like European conservatives as well, the most dangerous idea in the world was the idea that human beings, and by extension society, was perfectible. Or the idea at its heart, even worse, that human beings were endowed with reason, and with reason they could improve the world. For Pobedonosov, Russia must rely not on reason, artificial reason, which was not what it was cracked up to be by philosophers of the Enlightenment, but only on sacred and unquestioned forms of authority rooted in tradition. More, though, than philosophy was behind these conservative ideas, there was something else, I think, visible and increasingly common in conservative thought in Russia toward the end of the old regime, and certainly in Pobedonosov thought, and that was a deep fear of modernity, a fear of people, a fear about where the world was heading.